to Tazenda his loyalty.
Sharply he turned away. There was that strong desire to retch.
And then Channis's voice clashed on his ear. I think this is it, General.
Pritchard turned again.
An elder had opened the door silently and stood with a dignified and calm respect upon the threshold. He said, His Excellency, Governor of Rossum, in the name of the Lords of Tazenda, is pleased to present his permission for an audience, and request your appearance before him.
Sure thing. And Channis tightened his belt with a jerk and adjusted a Rossemian hood over his head.
Pritchard's jaw set. This was the beginning of the real gamble. The governor of Rossum was not of formidable appearance. For one thing, he was bareheaded, and his thinning hair, light brown, tending to gray, lent him mildness. His bony eye ridges lowered at them, and his eyes, set in a fine network of surrounding wrinkles, seemed calculating. But his fresh-cropped chin was soft and small, and, by the universal convention of followers of the pseudo-science of reading character by facial bony structure, seemed weak. Pritchard avoided the eyes and watched the chin. He didn't know whether that would be effective, if anything would be. The governor's voice was high-pitched, indifferent.
Welcome to Tazenda. We greet you in peace. You have eaten?
Fourth interlude. The two speakers passed each other on the road, and one stopped the other. I have a word from the first speaker. There was a half-apprehensive flicker in the other's eyes.
Intersection point.
Yes. May we live to see the dawn. Chapter 5. One Man and the Mule. There was no sign in any of Channis's actions that he was aware of any subtle change in the attitude of Pritchard and in their relations to each other. He leaned back on the hard wooden bench and spread-eagled his feet out in front of him.
What did you make of the governor?
Pritchard shrugged. Nothing at all. He certainly seemed no mental genius to me. A very poor specimen of the Second Foundation, if that's what he was supposed to be.
I don't think he was, you know. I'm not sure what to make of it.
Suppose you were a Second Foundationer. Channis grew thoughtful. What would you do? Suppose you had an idea of our purpose here. How would you handle us?
Conversion, of course.
Like the mule?
Channis looked up sharply.
Would we know if they had converted us?
I wonder.
And what if they were simply psychologists, but very clever ones?
In that case, I'd have us killed rather quickly.
And our ship?
No.
Channis wagged a forefinger. We're playing against a bluff, Pritchard, old man. It can only be a bluff. Even if they have emotional control down pat, we, you and I, are only fronts. It's the mule they must fight, and they're being just as careful of us as we are of them. I'm assuming that they know who we are.
Pritchard stared coldly. What do you intend doing?
Wait. The word was bitten off. Let them come to us. They're worried, maybe about the ship, but probably about the mule. They bluffed with the governor. It didn't work. We stayed pat. The next person they'll send will be a Second Foundationer, and he'll propose a deal of some sort.
And then?
And then we make the deal.
I don't think so.
Because you think it will double-cross the mule?
It won't.
No, the mule could handle your double-crosses, any you could invent. But I still don't think so.
Because you think then we couldn't double-cross the Foundationers?
Perhaps not. but that's not the reason. Chanis let his glance drop to what the other held in his fist, and said grimly, "You mean that's the reason?" Pritchard cradled his blaster. "That's right. You are under arrest."
"Why?"
"For treason to the first citizen of the Union." Chanis's lips hardened upon one another.
"What's going on?"
"Treason, as I said, and correction of the matter on my part. Your proof? Or evidence, assumptions, daydreams? Are you mad?"
"No."
"Are you? Do you think the Mule sends out unweaned youngsters on ridiculous swashbuckling missions for nothing?" It was queer to me at the time. But I wasted time in doubting myself. Why should he send you? Because you smile and dress well? Because you're 28? Perhaps because I can be trusted. Or aren't you in the market for logical reasons? Or perhaps because you can't be trusted. Which is logical enough, as it turns out. Are we matching paradoxes? Or is this all a word game to see who can say the least in the most words? And the blaster advanced, with Pritchard after it. He stood erect before the younger man.
"Stand up."
Chanis did so in no particular hurry and felt the muzzle of the blaster touch his belt with no shrinking of the stomach muscles. Pritchard said what the Mule wanted was to find the second foundation. He had failed, and I had failed, and the secret that neither of us can find is a well-hidden one. So there was one outstanding possibility left, and that was to find a seeker who already knew the hiding place.
"Is that I?"
Apparently it was. I didn't know then, of course, but though my mind must be slowing, it still points in the right direction. How easily we found Star's End. How miraculously you examined the correct field region of the lens from among an infinite number of possibilities. And having done so, how nicely we observed just the correct point for observation. You clumsy fool. Did you so underestimate me that no combination of impossible fortuities struck you as being too much for me to swallow?
You mean I've been too successful?
Too successful by half for any loyal man. Because the standards of success you set me were so low? And the blaster prodded, though in the face that confronted Chanis only the cold glitter of the eyes betrayed the growing anger. Because you are in the pay of the Second Foundation.
Pay?
Infinite contempt.
Prove that.
Or under the mental influence.
Without the Mule's knowledge, ridiculous.
With the Mule's knowledge, exactly my point, my young dullard.
With the Mule's knowledge.
Do you suppose else that you would be given a ship to play with? You led us to the Second Foundation as you were supposed to do.
I thresh a kernel of something or other out of this immensity of chaff. May I ask why I'm supposed to be doing all this? If I were a traitor, why should I lead you to the Second Foundation? Why not hither and yon through the galaxy, skipping gaily, finding no more than you ever did?
For the sake of the ship. And because the men of the Second Foundation quite obviously need nuclear weapons for self-defense.
You'll have to do better than that. One ship won't mean anything to them, and if they think they'll learn science from it and build nuclear power plants next year, they are very, very simple Second Foundationers indeed. On the order of simplicity as yourself, I should say.
You will have the opportunity to explain that to the mule.
We're going back to Calgan.
On the contrary, we're staying here. And the mule will join us in 15 minutes. More or less. Do you think he hasn't followed us, my sharp-witted, nimble-minded lump of self-admiration? You have played the decoy well in reverse. You may not have led our victims to us, but you have certainly led us to our victims. May I sit down, said Chanis, and explain something to you in picture drawings? Please. You will remain standing. At that, I can say it as well, standing. You think the mule followed us because of the hyper-relay on the communication circuit? The blaster might have wavered. Chanis wouldn't have sworn to it. He said, you don't look surprised. But I don't waste time doubting that you feel surprised. Yes, I knew about it. And now, having shown you that I knew of something you didn't think I did, I'll tell you something you don't know. That I know you don't. You allow yourself too many preliminaries, Chanis. I should think your sense of invention was more smoothly greased. There's no invention to this. There have been traitors, of course. Or enemy agents, if you prefer that term. But the mule knew of that in a rather curious way. It seems, you see, that some of his converted men had been tampered with. The blaster did waver that time, unmistakably. I emphasize that, Pritcher. It was why he needed me. I was an unconverted man. Didn't he emphasize to you that he needed an unconverted? Whether he gave you the real reason or not? Try something else, Chanis. If I were against the mule, I'd know it. Quietly, rapidly, Pritcher was feeling his mind. It felt the same. It felt the same. Obviously the man was lying. You mean you feel loyal to the mule? Perhaps. Loyalty wasn't tampered with. Too easily detectable, the mule said. But how do you feel mentally? Sluggish? Since you started this trip, have you always felt normal? Or have you felt strange sometimes, as though you weren't quite yourself? What are you trying to do? Bore a hole through me without touching the trigger? Pritcher withdrew his blaster half an inch. What are you trying to say? I say that you've been tampered with. You've been handled. You didn't see the mule install that hyper-relay. You didn't see anyone do it. You just found it there, I suppose. As I did too, and assumed it was the mule who had placed it there. And ever since, you've been assuming he was following us. Sure, the wrist receiver you're wearing contacts the ship on a wavelength mine isn't good for. Do you think I didn't know that? He was speaking quickly now, angrily. His cloak of indifference had dissolved into savagery. But it's not the mule that's coming toward us from out there. It's not the mule. Who, if not? Well, who do you suppose? I found that hyper-relay the day we left. But I didn't think it was the mule. He had no reason for indirection at that point. Don't you see the nonsense of it? If I were a traitor and he knew that, I could be converted as easily as you were, and he would have the secret of the location of the Second Foundation out of my mind without sending me half across the galaxy. Can you keep a secret from the mule? And if I didn't know, then I couldn't lead him to it. So why send me in either case? Obviously, that hyper-relay must have been put there by an agent of the Second Foundation. That's who's coming towards us now. And would you have been fooled if your precious mind hadn't been tampered with? What kind of normality have you that you imagine immense folly to be wisdom? Me? Bring a ship to the second foundation? What would they do with a ship? It's you they want, Pritcher. You know more about the Union than anyone but the mule, and you're not dangerous to them while he is. That's why they put the direction of search into my mind. Of course, it was completely impossible for me to find Tazenda by random searchings of the lens. I knew that. But I knew there was the second foundation after us, and I knew they engineered it. Why not play their game? It was a battle of bluffs. They wanted us, and I wanted their location. And space take the one that couldn't outbluff the other. But it's we that will lose as long as you hold that blaster on me. And it obviously isn't your idea. It's theirs. Give me the blaster, Pritcher. I know it seems wrong to you, but it isn't your mind speaking. It's the second foundation within you. Give me the blaster, Pritcher, and we'll face what's coming now together. Pritcher faced a growing confusion in horror. Plausibility. Could he be so wrong? Why this eternal doubt of himself? Why wasn't he sure? What made Channis sound so plausible? Plausibility. Or was it his own tortured mind fighting the invasion of the alien? Was he split in two? Hazily he saw Channis standing before him, hand outstretched. And suddenly, he knew he was going to give him the blaster. And as the muscles of his arm were on the point of contracting in the proper manner to do so, the door opened, not hastily, behind him. And he turned. There are perhaps men in the galaxy who can be confused for one another, even by men at their peaceful leisure. Correspondingly, there may be conditions of mind when even unlikely pairs may be misrecognized. But the mule rises above any combination of the two factors. Not all Pritcher's agony of mind prevented the instantaneous mental flood of cool vigor that engulfed him. Physically, the mule could not dominate any situation. Nor did he dominate this one. He was rather a ridiculous figure in his layers of clothing that thickened him past his normality, without allowing him to reach normal dimensions even so. His face was muffled in the usually dominant beak covered what was left in a cold red prominence. Probably as a vision of rescue, no greater incongruity could exist. He said, "Keep your blaster, Pritcher." Then he turned to Channis, who had shrugged and seated himself. The emotional context here seems rather confusing and considerably in conflict. What's this about someone other than myself following you? Pritcher intervened sharply. Was a hyper-relay placed upon our ship by your orders, sir? The mule turned cool eyes upon him. Certainly. Is it very likely that any organization in the galaxy other than the Union of Worlds would have access to one? He said, "Well, he's here, General." Indirect quotation is not necessary. Have you been saying anything, Channis? Yes. But mistakes, apparently, sir. It has been my opinion that the hyper-relay was put there by someone in the pay of the Second Foundation, and that we had been led here for some purpose of theirs, which I was prepared to counter. I was under the further impression that the General was more or less in their hands. You sound as if you think so no longer. I'm afraid not, or it would not have been you at the door. Well then, let us thresh this out. The mule peeled off the outer layers of padded and electrically heated clothing.
Do you mind if I sit down as well?
Now, we are safe here and perfectly free of any danger of intrusion. No native of this lump of ice will have any desire to approach this place. I assure you of that. And there was a grim earnestness about his insistence upon his powers. Channis showed his disgust.
Why privacy? Is someone going to serve tea and bring out the dancing girls?
Scarcely.
What was this theory of yours, young man?
A second foundationer was tracing you with a device which no one but I have, and...
How did you say you found this place?
Apparently, sir. It seems obvious, in order to account for known facts, that certain notions have been put into my head.
By these same second foundationers?
No one else, I imagine.
Then it did not occur to you that if a second foundationer could force, or entice, or inveigle you into going to the second foundation for purposes of his own, and I assume you imagined he used methods similar to mine, though, mind you, I can implant only emotions, not ideas. It did not occur to you that if he could do that, there was little necessity to put a hyper-relay on you.
And Shanice looked up sharply and met his sovereign's large eyes with sudden startle. Pritchard grunted, and a visible relaxation showed itself in his shoulders.
No, said Shanice, that hadn't occurred to me.
Or that if they were obliged to trace you, they couldn't feel capable of directing you, and that, undirected, you could have precious little chance of finding your way here as you did. Did that occur to you?
That neither.
Why not? Has your intellectual level receded to a so much greater than probable degree?
The only answer is a question, sir.
Are you joining General Pritchard in accusing me of being a traitor?
Have you a defense in case I am?
Only the one I presented to the general. If I were a traitor and knew the whereabouts of the second foundation, you could convert me and learn the knowledge directly. If you felt it necessary to trace me, then I hadn't the knowledge beforehand and wasn't a traitor. So I answer your paradox with another.
Then your conclusion?
That I am not a traitor.
To which I must agree, since your argument is irrefutable.
Then may I ask you why you had us secretly followed?
Because to all the facts, there is a third explanation.
Both you and Pritchard explained some facts in your own individual ways, but not all.
I, if you can spare me the time, will explain all. And in a rather short time, so there is little danger of boredom.
Sit down, Pritchard, and give me your blaster. There is no danger of attack on us any longer. None from in here and none from out there. None, in fact, even from the second foundation. Thanks to you, Channis.
The room was lit in the usual Rossemian fashion of electrically heated wire. A single bulb was suspended from the ceiling, and in its dim yellow glow, the three cast their individual shadows. The mule said, "Since I felt it necessary to trace Channis, it was obvious I expected to gain something thereby. Since he went to the second foundation with a startling speed and directness, we can reasonably assume that that was what I was expecting to happen. Since I did not gain the knowledge from him directly, something must have been preventing me. Those are the facts.
Channis, of course, knows the answer.
So do I.
Do you see it, Pritchard?"
And Pritchard said doggedly, "No, sir.
Then I'll explain. Only one kind of man can both know the location of the second foundation and prevent me from learning it. Chanis, I'm afraid you're not actually a traitor. You are rather a second foundationer. And Chanis's elbows rested on his knees as he leaned forward and through stiff and angry lips said, "What is your direct evidence? Deduction has proven wrong twice today."
"There is direct evidence too, Chanis. It was easy enough. I told you that my men had been tampered with. The tamperer must have been obviously someone who was A, unconverted, and B, fairly close to the center of things. The field was large, but not entirely unlimited. You were too successful, Chanis. People liked you too much. You got along too well. I wondered. And then I summoned you to take over this expedition, and it didn't set you back. I watched your emotions. It didn't bother you. You overplayed the confidence there, Chanis. No man of real competence could have avoided a dash of uncertainty at a job like that. Since your mind did avoid it, it was either a foolish one or a controlled one. It was easy to test the alternatives. I seized your mind at a moment of relaxation and filled it with grief for an instant and then removed it. You were angry afterwards with such accomplished art that I could have sworn it was a natural reaction, but for that which went first. For when I wrenched at your emotions, for just one instant, for one tiny instant before you could catch yourself, your mind resisted. It was all I needed to know. No one could have resisted me, even for that tiny instant, without control similar to mine." Chanis's voice was low and bitter. "Well then, now what?" "And now you die. As a second foundationer. Quite necessary, as I believe you realize." And once again Chanis stared into the muzzle of a blaster. A muzzle guided this time by a mind, not like Pritchard's, capable of offhand twisting to suit himself, but by one as mature as his own and as resistant to force as his own. And the period of time allotted him for a correction of events was small. What followed thereafter is difficult to describe by one with the normal complement of senses and the normal incapacity for emotional control. Essentially, this is what Chanis realized in the tiny space of time involved in the pushing of the mule's thumb upon the trigger contact. The mule's current emotional makeup was one of a hard and polished determination, unmisted by hesitation in the least. Had Chanis been sufficiently interested afterward to calculate the time involved from the determination to shoot to the arrival of the disintegrating energies, he might have realized that his leeway was about 1/5 of a second. That was barely time. What the mule realized in that same tiny space of time was that the emotional potential of Chanis's brain had surged suddenly upwards without his own mind feeling any impact, and that simultaneously a flood of pure, thrilling hatred cascaded upon him from an unexpected direction. It was that new emotional element that jerked his thumb off the contact. Nothing else could have done it, and almost together with his change of action came complete realization of the new situation. It was a tableau that endured far less than the significance adhering to it should require from a dramatic standpoint. There was the mule, thumb off the blaster, staring intently upon Chanis. There was Chanis, taut,
not quite daring to breathe yet. And there was Pritcher, convulsed in his chair, every muscle at a spasmodic breaking point, every tendon writhing in an effort to hurl forward, his face twisted at last out of schooled woodenness into an unrecognizable death mask of horrid hate. And his eyes only and entirely and supremely upon the mule. Only a word or two passed between Shannis and the mule. Only a word or two, and that utterly revealing stream of emotional consciousness that remains forever the true interplay of understanding between such as they. For the sake of our own limits, it is necessary to translate into words what went on then, and thenceforward. Channis said tensely, "You're between two fires, First Citizen. You can't control two minds simultaneously, not when one of them is mine. So you have your choice. Pritcher is free of your conversion now. I've snapped the bonds. He's the old Pritcher, the one who tried to kill you once, the one who thinks you're the enemy of all that is free and right and holy. And he's the one besides who knows that you've debased him to helpless adulation for 5 years. I'm holding him back now by suppressing his will, but if you kill me, that ends. And in considerably less time than you could shift your blaster, or even your will, he will kill you." The mule quite plainly realized that. He did not move. Channis continued, "If you turn to place him under control, to kill him, to do anything, you won't ever be quick enough to turn again to stop me." The mule still did not move. Only a soft sigh of realization. "So," said Channis, "throw down the blaster, and let us be on even terms again, and you can have Pritcher back." "I made a mistake," said the mule, finally. "It was wrong to have a third party present when I confronted you. It introduced one variable too many. It is a mistake that must be paid for, I suppose." He dropped the blaster carelessly and kicked it to the other end of the room. Simultaneously, Pritcher crumpled into profound sleep. "He'll be normal when he awakes," said the mule indifferently. The entire exchange from the time the mule's thumb had begun pressing the trigger contact to the time he dropped the blaster had occupied just under a second and a half of time. But just beneath the borders of consciousness, for a time just above the borders of detection, Channis caught a fugitive emotional gleam in the mule's mind, and it was still one of sure and confident triumph. Chapter 6. One Man, the Mule, and Another. Two men, apparently relaxed and entirely at ease, poles apart physically, with every nerve that served as emotional detector quivering tensely. The mule, for the first time in long years, had insufficient surety of his own way. Channis knew that, though he could protect himself for the moment, it was an effort, and that the attack upon him was none such for his opponent. In a test of endurance, Channis knew he would lose. But it was deadly to think of that. To give away to the mule an emotional weakness would be to hand him a weapon. There was already that glimpse of something, a winner's something, in the mule's mind. To gain time. Why did the others delay? Was that the source of the mule's confidence? What did his opponent know that he didn't? The mind he watched told nothing. If only he could read ideas. And yet, Chanis braked his own mental whirling roughly. There was only that, to gain time. Chanis said, since it is decided and not denied by myself after our little duel over Pritcher that I am a second Foundationer, suppose you tell me why I came to Tazenda. Oh, no. And the mule laughed with high-pitched confidence. I am not Pritcher. I need make no explanations to you. You had what you thought were reasons. Whatever they were, your actions suited me, and so I inquire no further. Yet there must be such gaps in your conception of the story. Is Tazenda the second foundation you expected to find? Pritchard spoke much of your other attempt at finding it, and of your psychologist tool, Ebling Meese. He babbled a bit sometimes under my, slight encouragement. Think back on Ebling Meese, First Citizen. Why should I? Confidence. Chanis felt that confidence edge out into the open, as if with the passage of time, any anxiety the mule might be having was increasingly vanishing. He said, firmly restraining the rush of desperation, "You lack curiosity, then?" Pritchard told me of Meese's vast surprise at something. There was his terribly drastic urging for speed, for a rapid warning of the Second Foundation. Why? Why? Ebling Meese died. The Second Foundation was not warned, and yet the Second Foundation exists. The mule smiled in real pleasure, and with a sudden and surprising dash of cruelty that Chanis felt advance and suddenly withdraw. But apparently the Second Foundation was warned. Else how and why did one Bale Chanis arrive on Calgan to handle my men and to assume the rather thankless task of outwitting me? The warning came too late, that is all. Then, and Chanis allowed pity to drench outward from him, you don't even know what the Second Foundation is, or anything of the deeper meaning of all that has been going on. To gain time. The mule felt the other's pity, and his eyes narrowed with instant hostility. He rubbed his nose in his familiar four-fingered gesture and snapped, "Amuse yourself, then. What of the Second Foundation?" Chanis spoke deliberately, in words rather than in emotional symbology. He said, "From what I have heard, it was the mystery that surrounded the Second Foundation that most puzzled Meese. Harry Seldon founded his two units so differently. The First Foundation was a splurge that in two centuries dazzled half the galaxy, and the Second was an abyss that was dark. You won't understand why that was unless you can once again feel the intellectual atmosphere of the days of the dying empire. It was a time of absolutes, of the great final generalities, at least in thought. It was a sign of decaying culture, of course, that dams had been built against the further development of ideas. It was his revolt against these dams that made Seldon famous. It was that one last spark of youthful creation in him that lit the empire in a sunset glow and dimly foreshadowed the rising sun of the Second Empire. Very dramatic. So what? So he created his foundations according to the laws of psychohistory, but who knew better than he that even those laws were relative? He never created a finished product. Finished products are for decadent minds. His was an evolving mechanism, and the Second Foundation was the instrument of that evolution. We, First Citizen of your temporary union of worlds, we are the guardians of Seldon's plan. Only we." Are you trying to talk yourself into courage? Inquired the mule contemptuously. Or are you trying to impress me? For the second foundation, Selden's plan, the second empire, all impresses me not the least, nor touches any spring of compassion, sympathy, responsibility, nor any other source of emotional aid you may be trying to tap in me. And in any case, poor fool, speak of the second foundation in the past tense, for it is destroyed. Janus felt the emotional potential that pressed upon his mind rise in intensity as the mule rose from his chair and approached. He fought back furiously, but something crept relentlessly on within him, battering and bending his mind back and back. He felt the wall behind him, and the mule faced him, skinny arms akimbo, lips smiling terribly beneath that mountain of nose. The mule said, "Your game is through, Janus. The game of all of you, of all the men of what used to be the Second Foundation. Used to be. Used to be. What were you sitting here waiting for all this time, with your babble to Pritcher, when you might have struck him down and taken the blaster from him without the least effort of physical force? You were waiting for me, weren't you? Waiting to greet me in a situation that would not too arouse my suspicions. Too bad for you that I needed no arousal. I knew you. I knew you well, Janus of the Second Foundation. But what are you waiting for now? You still throw words at me desperately, as though the mere sound of your voice would freeze me to my seat. And all the while you speak, something in your mind is waiting, and waiting, and is still waiting. But no one is coming. None of those you expect. None of your allies. You are alone here, Janus, and you will remain alone. Do you know why? It is because your second foundation miscalculated me to the very dregs of the end. I knew their plan early. They thought I would follow you here and be proper meat for their cooking. You were to be a decoy indeed. A decoy for a poor, foolish, weakling mutant, so hot on the trail of empire that he would fall blindly into an obvious pit. But am I their prisoner? I wonder if it occurred to them that I'd scarcely be here without my fleet, against the artillery of any unit of which they are entirely and pitifully helpless. Did it occur to them that I would not pause for discussion or wait for events? My ships were launched against Tazenda 12 hours ago, and they are quite, quite through with their mission. Tazenda is laid in ruins. Its centers of population are wiped out. There was no resistance. The Second Foundation no longer exists, Janus, and I, the queer, ugly weakling, am the ruler of the galaxy. Janus could do nothing but shake his head feebly. No. No. Yes. Yes, mimicked the mule. And if you are the last one alive, and you may be, that will not be for long, either. And then there followed a short, pregnant pause, and Janus almost howled with the sudden pain of that tearing penetration of the innermost tissues of his mind. The mule drew back and muttered, "Not enough. You do not pass the test after all. Your despair is pretense. Your fear is not the broad overwhelming that adheres to the destruction of an ideal, but the puny, seeping fear of personal destruction. and the mule's weak hand seized Chanis by the throat in a puny grip that Chanis was somehow unable to break.
You are my insurance, Chanis. You are my director and safeguard against any underestimation I may make.
The mule's eyes bore down upon him, insistent, demanding.
Have I calculated rightly, Chanis? Have I outwitted your men of the Second Foundation?
Tazenda is destroyed, Chanis, tremendously destroyed. So why is your despair pretense? Where is the reality? I must have reality and truth. Talk, Chanis. Talk.
Have I penetrated, then, not deeply enough?
Does the danger still exist?
Talk, Chanis. Where have I gone wrong?
Chanis felt the words drag out of his mouth. They did not come willingly. He clenched his teeth against them. He bit his tongue. He tensed every muscle of his throat. And they came out, gasping, pulled out by force and tearing his throat and tongue and teeth on the way.
Truth, he squeaked. Truth.
Yes, truth.
What is left to be done?
Selden founded Second Foundation here.
Here, as I said. I told no lie. The psychologists arrived and took control of the native population.
Of Tazenda?
The mule plunged deeply into the flooding torture of the other's emotional upwellings, tearing at them brutally.
It is Tazenda I have destroyed. You know what I want.
Give it to me.
Not Tazenda. I said Second Foundationers might not be those apparently in power. Tazenda is the figurehead.
The words were almost unrecognizable, forming themselves against every atom of will of the Second Foundationer.
Rossum.
Rossum? Rossum is the world.
The mule loosed his grip and Chanis dropped into a huddle of pain and torture.
And you thought to fool me, said the mule softly.
You were fooled.
It was the last dying shred of resistance in Chanis.
But not long enough for you and yours.
I am in communication with my flate, and after Tazenda can come Rossum.
But first,
Chanis felt the excruciating darkness rise against him, and the automatic lift of his arm to his tortured eyes could not ward it off. It was a darkness that throttled, and as he felt his torn, wounded mind reeling backwards, backwards into the everlasting black, there was that final picture of the triumphant mule. Laughing matchstick, that long, fleshy nose quivering with laughter. The sound faded away. The darkness embraced him lovingly. It ended with a cracking sensation that was like the jagged glare of a lightning flash, and Chanis came slowly to earth while sight returned painfully in blurry transmission through tear-drenched eyes. His head ached unbearably, and it was only with a stab of agony that he could bring up a hand to it. Obviously, he was alive. Softly, like feathers caught up in an eddy of air that had passed, his thoughts steadied and drifted to rest. He felt comfort suck in. From outside. Slowly, torturedly, he bent his neck, and relief was a sharp pang. for the door was open, and the first speaker stood just inside the threshold. He tried to speak, to shout, to warn, but his tongue froze, and he knew that a part of the mule's mighty mind still held him and clamped all speech within him. He bent his neck once more. The mule was still in the room. He was angry and hot-eyed. He laughed no longer, but his teeth were bared in a ferocious smile. Chanis felt the first speaker's mental influence moving gently over his mind with a healing touch, and then there was the numbing sensation as it came into contact with the mule's defense for an instant of struggle and withdrew. The mule said gratingly, with a fury that was grotesque in his meager body, "Then another comes to greet me." His agile mind reached its tendrils out of the room, out, out. "You are alone," he said. And the first speaker interrupted with an acquiescence. "I am thoroughly alone. It is necessary that I be alone, since it was I who miscalculated your future 5 years ago. There would be a certain satisfaction to me in correcting that matter without aid. Unfortunately, I did not count on the strength of your field of emotional repulsion that surrounded this place. It took me long to penetrate. I congratulate you upon the skill with which it was constructed." "Thank you for nothing," came the hostile rejoinder. "Banding no compliments with me. Have you come to add your brain splinter to that of yonder cracked pillar of your realm?" The first speaker smiled. "Why, the man you call Bael Chanis performed his mission well. The more so since he was not your mental equal by far. I can see, of course, that you have mistreated him. Yet it may be that we may restore him fully even yet. He is a brave man, sir. He volunteered for this mission, although we were able to predict mathematically the huge chance of damage to his mind. A more fearful alternative than that of mere physical crippling." Chanis's mind pulsed futilely with what he wanted to say and couldn't. The warning he wished to shout and was unable to. He could only emit that continuous stream of fear. Fear. The mule was calm. "You know, of course, of the destruction of Tazenda."
"I do. The assault by your fleet was foreseen."
Grimly, "Yes, so I suppose." "But not prevented, eh?"
"No. Not prevented."
The first speaker's emotional symbology was plain. It was almost a self-horror, a complete self-disgust. "And the fault is much more mine than yours. Who could have imagined your powers 5 years ago? We suspected from the start, from the moment you captured Kalgan, that you had the powers of emotional control. That was not too surprising, First Citizen, as I can explain to you. Emotional contact, such as you and I possess, is not a very new development. Actually, it is implicit in the human brain. Most humans can read emotion in a primitive manner by associating it pragmatically with facial expression, tone of voice, and so on. A good many animals possess the faculty to a higher degree. They use the sense of smell to a good extent, and the emotions involved are, of course, less complex. Actually, humans are capable of much more, but the faculty of direct emotional contact tended to atrophy with the development of speech a million years back. It has been the great advance of our second foundation that this forgotten sense has been restored to at least some of its potentialities. But we are not born with its full use. A million years of decay is a formidable obstacle, and we must educate the sense, exercise it as we exercise our muscles. And there you have the main difference. You were born with it. So much we could calculate. We could also calculate the effect of such a sense upon a person in a world of men who did not possess it. The seeing man in the kingdom of the blind. We calculated the extent to which a megalomania would take control of you, and we thought we were prepared. But for two factors, we were not prepared. The first was the great extent of your sense. We can induce emotional contact only when in eyeshot, which is why we are more helpless against physical weapons than you might think. Sight plays such an enormous part. Not so with you. You are definitely known to have had men under control, and further, to have had intimate emotional contact with them when out of sight and out of earshot. That was discovered too late. Secondly, we did not know of your physical shortcomings, particularly the one that seemed so important to you, that you adopted the name of the mule. We didn't foresee that you were not merely a mutant, but a sterile mutant, and the added psychic distortion due to your inferiority complex passed us by. We allowed only for a megalomania. Not for an intensely psychopathic paranoia as well. It is myself that bears the responsibility for having missed all that, for I was the leader of the Second Foundation when you captured Calgan. When you destroyed the First Foundation, we found out. But too late. And for that fault, millions have died on Tazenda. And you will correct things now. The mule's thin lips curled, his mind pulsing with hate. What will you do? Fatten me? Restore me to a masculine vigor? Take away from my past the long childhood in an alien environment? Do you regret my sufferings? Do you regret my unhappiness? I have no sorrow for what I did in my necessity. Let the galaxy protect itself as best it can, since it stirred not a whit for my protection when I needed it. Your emotions are, of course, said the first speaker, only the children of your background and are not to be condemned. Merely changed. The destruction of Tazenda was unavoidable. The alternative would have been a much greater destruction generally throughout the galaxy over a period of centuries. We did our best in our limited way. We withdrew as many men from Tazenda as we could. We decentralized the rest of the world. Unfortunately, our measures were of necessity far from adequate. It left many millions to die. Do you not regret that? Not at all. Any more than I regret the 100,000 that must die on Rossum in not more than 6 hours. On Rossum, said the first speaker, quickly. He turned to Chanis, who had forced himself into a half-sitting posture, and his mind exerted its force. Chanis felt the duel of minds strain over him. And then there was a short snapping of the bond, and the words came tumbling out of his mouth. Sir, I have failed completely. He forced it from me not 10 minutes before your arrival. I could not resist him, and I offer no excuses. He knows Tazenda is not the Second Foundation. He knows that Rossum is. And the bonds closed down upon him again. The first speaker frowned. I see. What is it you are planning to do? Do you really wonder? Do you really find it difficult to penetrate the obvious? All this time that you have preached to me of the nature of emotional contact, all this time that you have been throwing words such as megalomania and paranoia at me, I have been working. I have been in contact with my fleet, and it has its orders. In 6 hours, unless I should for some reason counteract my orders, they are to bombard all of Rossum except this lone village and an area of 100 square miles about it.